I'm really happy that you could make it. I know that for some people, there's a lot involved in making it here with work and family and other ongoing obligations or things that you're involved in. And to set all of that aside and be here with no guarantee of what's going to happen. And the only thing that we know is any idea we have of what's going to happen is not what's actually going to happen. So remembering that kind of playful willingness that's in us together this week in the moments where your habits of mind are getting you down. So we could already say, even if I just said we don't know what's going to happen, we do know that there's going to be a couple of times that you want to leave. So that's one reason that we just call it a 7-day retreat, that here we are, so that we can ride through those bumps. And hopefully I'll be wrong. It'll be like jinxing, reverse jinxing. But just the fact of being away from our usual, familiar, and not having access to one of our main addictive drugs, which is confirmation from other people through speaking. Being away from that can be bring out a kind of monster in the mind. So whenever we can kind of fall back into and tune into our openness, that we did all that we had to do to get here, and here we are, and there's no guarantee of what's going to happen. So that different kind of celebration that we're starting today. It's almost like walking into a mirror world. So we're leaving behind our usual ways of communication and opening up to so many different kinds of communication. So we just finished a shorter 3-day retreat today. And there were several people on that retreat, as there are in this room today, who have never been on a silent retreat before. So don't think that you're alone. And a couple of them said in the opening interviews that they had never been silent before for more than a few minutes. That all of their friends and relatives were trying to convince them not to go on the retreat because there's no way they could go even one day in silence. And by the third day, they were happy they'd gone against that well-meaning advice of their beloved family and friends, almost not wanting to leave the silence. If there'd been room on the retreat, I think they might have wanted to stay. Feeling for the other kind of joy, the other kind of communication, another kind of aliveness, and even another kind of me, another kind of oneself. Being open to realize how little you know you, so that you can start to know you. And being open in getting to know you, that it's not just those deep, dark, nightmare kind of parts of yourself that might show up. There's, from my point of view, a lot more of you that's come into the room with you, that you can get to know, that's bright and buoyant, and maybe doesn't have a lot to say in words, but has a lot to give to yourself and to the world. And what if that's already here with us? It's not something that you have to create. It's not like, let's just deconstruct our personas and then we can use that material or some new material that we find somewhere and create a good person that we could then be. It's not like kind of semi-consciously piecing together the descriptions you've heard of what a good meditator is and then trying to be that at all. We could even start by saying, we don't know what meditation is, so how could we know what good meditation is? Much less a good meditator. And do we know what a human being is? I hope each of us has met at least one human being that we can feel the goodness. And I hope you've sometimes met yourself that way. But what is a human being? And what is that goodness? Where does it come from? How does it communicate itself? How does it come across? I'm so glad that you're here to discover for yourselves. To discover for ourselves, each for yourself, and me for myself. So even if I give some instructions for meditation, and I give some talks about what seems important to me, it's really important in the listening to those words that will be coming in, meditation instructions and teachings. Not as a replacement for your own discovery, your own discovering. And so if we keep kind of, it would be like if our psyche is like a pillow that we could fluff up so that we can feel for the openness, the playfulness, that willingness to... to be pulled into discovery instead of being in a hurry to have an answer. So when you come across in your experience the realization that you don't know who you are or what you are, maybe be happy with me that you can bear that realization. And not believing too much, not giving too much space to the thoughts that after all these years, I don't even know who I am. Not listening much to that. We've already listened to that. Too much. But fluffing up and feeling for a kind of exhilaration in not knowing. Because it leaves space for a real discovery. And real discovery in being yourself. So it's not that we have to be perfect and then we can be ourselves. As we start to realize we don't know what we are, and then that starts to leave room for us to start to be ourselves more, we can start to actually feel what that is at the same time. So the great help of being in this place where a whole bunch of people really dedicate their lives to just making this place be available for people like us to come to. And without letting it be a burdensome thing, to just feel how great that is that there is this place that we could come to. It's one of the hardest things as a meditation teacher to find a good place to go to for a retreat. So the fact that there is this whole bunch of people doing all of that messy stuff with money and salaries and mortgages and all of that, so that this is a wide open space for us, and there's a pond and there's a lot of green space, and there's a huge tree by the main house that you can visit when you're not sure what life is about. I'm so glad that you could be here to feel, to taste what being in silence can bring. So even if sometimes the fact of not speaking, not reading, not listening to music, not taking pictures, not turning on all those machines, and especially not turning on the phone, please do yourself a favor. It's so tempting. I can't tell you how many people on retreat have just thought, oh, I'll just check for one SMS. And then guess what the SMS was? Some terrible, it seemed terrible in the silence, thing that had to be addressed and took over a lot of space in their mind. So what was never so terrible, and can wait until next week. The relief of diving into ourselves and finding out what our persona is or was. So not having to interact with people, even to say, excuse me, sorry, thank you, wasn't that great, wasn't that terrible, much less any more than that. Not needing to say that to anyone, like having permission, being allowed to be together and go deep and not need to inhabit the persona so much. We can actually discover something about our persona. What is it that I wish to present? What are the situations where I'm more in a mode of wanting to impress, feeling insecure, feeling down, feeling up, so feeling lower, feeling higher? And what's the outcome when I kind of buy into that mode of wanting to impress or wanting to defend, which is usually the same thing? What's the outcome? What do I feel when that's coming at me? And what happens when I at least wish to let go of that and be in some other mode? Isn't it a different world altogether? So you can feel free with the silence to play with how much we can call it space, or how much isolation helps you feel yourself and not the persona. The persona that has come to be. So we don't also want to get into a battle with persona. There are all these reasons that your persona got into the shape it is in, doing the things that it does. It's interesting. It's painful. But it's not your fault. There are ways that we buy into it, accept it, empower it, but it's not your fault. So let it be interesting, and let it be not the only thing. I'm happy that you're here to be in this experiment of being in silence together, where you can feel free, if you would like, not to make eye contact with other people on any particular day or for the whole retreat, if that helps you. If you notice that you have such a seeking for attention that with every eye contact you notice yourself reaching through your eyes for confirmation, recognition, then it might be helpful to have more time with your eyes either kind of widely focused or enjoying the grass or the sky. But if we don't need to make it a rule, and certainly not a sense of grimness, if we can feel that we're going for a deep joy of living in a way where we could be in connection without the persona way, without the seeking for confirmation way, in the way, then it becomes obvious the deeper connections that are already here, with people you know and don't know, already in this room. Both really human and personal connections that with people that you don't know, and people that you do know, and the kind of more impersonal human, the impersonal human, just because we're human, connections. I'm really happy that you could be here to let what in this situation will irritate you or make you feel up or down, so that what we learn here about our reactions can really come with us when the retreat is over. As the silence kind of rises up and seeps into us, people usually talk about silence descending, and it feels like in this hall it more comes up and fills us up. One very common thing that happens is that the mind gets really, really talkative. So it doesn't happen to everyone. And especially if I say it out loud, some minds will automatically like, no way, I'm not doing that. But if and when that happens, that you have a busier mind than you think you've ever had, take it as very normal, a normal reaction to the fact of silence seeping up, the fact of starting to be in immersion in silence. There's plenty of room for thought, of course. If we were here and the idea was no one is allowed to think, it would be a torture chamber. It would be trying to twist the human being into something it isn't. So we're open to thought to learn again, what is it? Actually, and what is its place? What is its kind of rightful place? Where does it do good? And where have we been asking of our thinking the wrong kind of tasks? So just for example, noticing if you want your thinking mind to be your decider, the one that decides things for you, how well does that work out? Even practicing with really small decisions. And then, if you have big decisions, you can try it with big decisions. And what are other aspects of a human being that might be better at deciding what needs to be decided? So there's an idea about life, spiritual life, and meditation that somewhere, secretly or overtly, the basic idea is to get out your axe and chop off the ego. And that's not the secret agenda here. What is an ego anyway, first of all? And why is it? Is there a place for that? Since it is. And once we come to know ego, what it is, where does ego want to grow into? Like everything that's alive. It has a natural next step if we let it grow up. So what does ego grow up into? And it's not a secret way of saying, get out your hatchet and chop off your ego. Friendliness with all things, including whatever you might call ego, seems to be the efficient path for things to fall into place. As things fall into place, sometimes it's a wild ride, and then remembering where you are a playful openness, that that's what you are. And ready for a wild ride, exactly what you secretly longed for. Are there any questions so far? We have the chance to also discover different kinds of intelligence, including different kinds of intelligence in the body. And so I really encourage you to explore posture, explore different ways that your body might be comfortably still for a long time and like really happy, not wanting to move. So it happens to human beings. It has happened for thousands of years. And it will happen to you. With enough exploration, finding different ways of lying or sitting or standing that are specific to your body, that help bring out this love of stillness, so that even if a fly is buzzing around and landing on your nose, the stillness is so yummy that you don't even want to move a little finger. So it's not that image of meditation where you're sitting and your knee hurts and you're just in agonizing pain until the bell rings and then you survive and you did it and you get the reward. It's really a whole other kind of approach to stillness. At the beginning of a meditation, we make each our best guess of what's going to be comfortable enough for the 30 or 45 minutes that we have together. And if there's something that's physically so painful that that's all that's going on for you, then surely there's a way you could just really silently adjust your body so that the pain is not all that's going on for you. And then exploring a different posture the next time. Maybe sometimes it's just a millimeter or a centimeter or quarter inch or a half inch, a little bit higher, the feet better supported. And it makes all the difference, and then you get that yum that doesn't want to let you go, and you don't want to leave it. So on the board, you have some pictures of different ways of lying down and sitting. And the basic idea with sitting is you probably need to sit higher than you do. And if sitting higher than you used to, your knees are not in contact with the ground, then put some support under your knee or knees, so that everything is well supported and then can relax. With lying down, the main thing is if you lie on your back, you want to have at least your knees higher than your butt. So putting a cushion under your knees. But maybe your whole legs could be higher than your butt. And it's just good for the lower back that way. I really recommend also lying face down. Try it out at least one time. And if you just didn't get quite the right configuration of pillows, then try again. It tends to be a posture of great depth for many people. And if you know that you snore or you think you might snore, it would be a posture where you're less likely to snore. So snoring is allowed to happen, but we're not in a race to snore the most, the fastest, or whatever. So feel free, and you also will feel more free if you're less likely to snore. So lying on your side or face down anyway could be great for your meditation, and it might add to the silence in the hall. To say that we're here to rest deeply and tell you that you shouldn't sleep in the hall would be the same kind of torture as saying that you shouldn't have a single thought. Of course you're going to sleep if you lie down, partly because most of us are tired. Even people who've already been, there's about 6 or 7 people who've already started retreat on Thursday and are still retreating through. So they've already been resting a few days. But I have the feeling they could rest a little more. So welcome to the possibility of literal resting freely, not thinking that there's anything wrong if you're literally resting in the meditation hall. A lot of magic happens there, so be ready for surprises. Sometimes those surprises take a few years to dawn on us, and sometimes you're aware of, you have a little clue of what's happening. And if we can let the little clue of what's happening be enough to go on. And then there's taking the idea of resting more deeply, the possibility of living a restful life, even if we're very active. The possibility of being at ease on the planet as it is, responsive, and happy. So we could already start feeling into our beings for that possibility, that there might be a kind of field or pool of okayness, deep okayness, in the words of John de Ruyter, a Canadian teacher. That even if we couldn't sleep, which sometimes happens that people come on a deep rest retreat knowing that they can't sleep. One guy hadn't slept for a few weeks, and he came anyway. And I was kind of proud of his courage to go deeper into what rest is. So that we can start tapping into restfulness even when we're tired and still be willing to make room for resting so that the freshness comes more fully through. I'm also very, very happy that a friend that I have shared meditation with for almost a decade signed up for this retreat. So Erica here, you saw her going out to her son and coming back in. This is Erica. We met about 9 years ago. She already started teaching Pilates a year before that. And she's like this amazing Pilates teacher, in case you're ever in California. She's a genius. And she came on a retreat in Bodh Gaya that Gemma and I were teaching with Christopher. Some of you have been on that retreat as well. And a few months later, she was on a 2-month retreat that we offered in India, the first long, long retreat that we offered. And so our friendship went deep early on, and I've been wishing for her to be able to assist with the teachings for a few years now. And you saw her son and his age, and that was in the way until this year. And she bravely agreed to assist, even though she's here with her son and her mother, who was helping with the childcare, is leaving. So, juggling, but here. So, I'm very happy. So, she'll be in the hall sometimes, and she'll be available for interviews. And a couple meditations, probably. So you don't get stuck just with me. In the morning, we also have the good luck of yoga with Katora, who is also here giving up her retreat time. She could be here in the hall. Instead, she's playing dinosaurs with my son. dinosaurs eating each other, and dinosaurs eating each other's eggs, and lots of gory things going on up there. So I'm so very grateful to her for that, and for the connection that she and my son Gyan have, so that that's possible, because it could be, anyone else could be willing, but he wouldn't be necessarily willing. So she also happens to be a fabulous yoga teacher, and she'll be here most or all the mornings at the connected movement time in the pavilion, which is behind the dining room. You're welcome to do your own practice of any kind, like Qigong or going on a walk, jogging, dancing, swimming, silent, but feel very free, and feel very free to attend her class. And she's so dedicated to yoga and has studied in Asia and the West. And she's been studying Sanskrit as well to deepen that, like the true sort of meaning of yoga, not just the movements and the asana. So feel very free to join that class. And if it works out with Gyan, I would love to lead a different kind of connected movement in the same place instead of the yoga class once or twice. We'll see. It's the morning time is not a time that I can easily leave Gyan. He would want to come with me. It might not work so well. So that will be posted. I'll just see if he's settling in well and make a good guess and post it. And if he comes, he comes. So since that might not happen, I won't say much about it. It's an improvised kind of movement. So if it's the kind of thing that you think you would never want to do, please come. And it's a great chance to feel into our mental habit of feeling watched and judged and controlled and censored, and to notice that that's happening in our own minds. That no matter what anyone else is thinking of us, usually they're not thinking anything of us, they have their eyes closed, they're doing their own thing. We can really get that root of our suffering is happening within the realm of our possibility to release, to practice releasing, to practice living without. And that we don't need that kind of pressure and being watched to be good. We don't need to have the sense of being watched and censored to motivate us. That there is actually graceful, meaningful movement that comes. So even though I will be giving meditation instructions in the morning and a couple of guided meditations in some of the afternoon times on some of the days, the main thing that we're here for, which is why I'm so glad that we're here for it, is for each of us to feel more finely with joy what are your own inner suggestions or instructions or movements that is genuine and whole for you. And it does kind of turn upside down the usual mode of authority very happily. So please do make experiments just keeping in mind the silence. Please do make experiments if you start to feel you need more movement. So please do more movement. Don't think that there's some kind of regime that you have to be lying down and still the whole time. So if the meditation and then the walking and then the meditation and the walking doesn't give you enough movement, feel free. And if you're not sure, just come and talk to Erica or myself and we can find what your inner suggestion is more clearly, maybe. If you feel you need more stillness, more long stretches of stillness, that's also easy to find as you get rested. waking up earlier in the morning, for example, or staying up later at the nighttime. So this, we have the luxury of having this hall here devoted to stillness the whole time. So there's not even the yoga class here. You could come anytime, day or night, and be with yourself and life. So appreciating the luxury of having arrived here, having already done what you could to make space for this week, and what you couldn't get done will not end the world till next Sunday. And just briefly getting a sense of the luxury of this time and the amount of support that we get to enjoy. And so much of that support is kind of secret support, not people who are, no one's been putting like the advertisements all along the hall to remind us of how much they've done so that we could be here. How much care went into the menus and where to source the food from and that kind of thing. So let's have a very short, maybe 10-minute meditation. So if you're comfortable enough, that's fine. If you want to change position, that's fine. So we'll have this brief meditation now and then a break of 15 or 20 minutes before supper so that people can finish setting up tents and that kind of thing. And then after supper at 8 o'clock, we'll meet back here in the hall for a 45-minute meditation and then rest time. First, being here without trying to meditate. Feeling and noticing. What is it to be here? How do you know you're here? What happens? What if there's not a right or a wrong way to be here? Is there an assumption that you're getting it wrong, or is there a hunger to get it right? And can we feel the roots of those tendencies? And then kind of brush them away and just feel what else is here. What else is going on? Without pressure. Rather, possibly with a love of life. We already are here, so we don't need to try to be here. And sometimes we notice trying to be here as part of what's happening. And what does it feel like? Is it in a place in the body, some kind of pressure? And what else is here? And still, again, before we speak of meditation, can we leave some space for feeling what we love about life? Feeling what gives the spark to life. Feeling what is important, what is your deepest wish, or even what are all those cells of that we call body? What are all those cells living for? Resonating with your deepest wish in this life. However silly you might think it is, or wrong or right, apart from right and wrong, just to resonate with that wish, or we could say knowing of what is needed or important, or giving spark to our lives, completing us. So maybe love or freedom, joy, service or connection, clarity. Whatever it may be for you. And also still noticing what happens when you have the encouragement to feel for what's important or what you deeply wish for. What you live for, or what you would live for if you dared. Feeling if there's a place or places in the body that kind of resonate with that? Or if what's predominant is more the fear of not quite getting it right, having the wrong wish. Kindness for whatever alights in your mind. If an image comes to mind, if a feeling, if a place in the body, if a sense of resonating, vibrating, if a word or words come to mind, letting these be like treasures to keep close by. Feel free whenever you want to feel free to have the option of feeling the texture of that wish. If you're ever unsure what to do, if your mind is overwhelming you, or if you're just standing in line for supper, this option, this possibility. Letting that image fill you, letting that music fill you, letting that vibration fill you, whatever it is, however your mind works. And relaxing. To sense the simple importance of this deep wish. Even if it's wordless, even if it's not for a thing. And just feeling, sensing yourself in a room full of that kind of candle. Human beings with deep wish. Doing our best, getting out from under right and wrong thinking, honoring that little candle flame or roaring fire, whatever it is for you, of deep wish, pull or calling, or knowing. And how this wish is not something we planted in ourselves. So relaxing again, and still not trying to meditate, whatever that might mean. But maybe feeling your body supported by the ground, opening your eyes. And just ever so simply getting up and walking towards dinner.